This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, it's time for our second Christmas stocking edition of Share Shootout here on Classic Business. We're having a bit of fun and we're highlighting a few counters worth adding to your portfolio. The usual caveats, obviously, that a few stocks doesn't a diversified portfolio make. But the issue is that it's always worthwhile having a look at individual firms because they can be extrapolated out into broader themes and broader sectoral themes. Tonight we're zooming in on the small and mid-cap sector. And what I like about the small and mid-cap sector is that it doesn't appear on the big managers' radar screens. And I think often you can find real gems in the space. It does also mean that there's liquidity issues that one needs to be mindful of. But if you're investing and not trading, then it really is a sector that can produce some outsized returns. So with that in mind, what's hot and what's not for the stocking this year? I've got back again after almost a year, Janine van Eck. We make this an annual thing, Janine, portfolio manager at Standard Stockbroking. Great to see you again.
Thank you.
On the line, we've got Charles Bester, who's a wealth and portfolio manager at Career International. Charles, thanks for joining us.
Good evening. Thank you very much.
And Anthony Clark, who is flying solo now at Small Talk Daily, if you want to find him. And Twitter just wasn't the same without you. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Nice to be back.
Kick us off here, and as I said, liquidity issues aside, small caps offer some really good opportunities because they are very often not on the radar screens of the big managers. How has the sector fared this year? It's also had a torrid time of it looking at the index.
Yeah, it has. I think we, just like your last interview, we can talk about shrinkflation. The small cap and the mid cap index respectively are down about 11% of the mid cap and about 14% of small cap as a whole, although certain other stocks in that basket have fallen quite sharply. Like Dawn, for example, the plumbing supplies company, as of today, is down 99.9%. Tate Holdings down 72%. Group 5 down 97%. And the list is endless. There's only a few counters showing some growth this year. But that's where the opportunity lies, because in times of duress, in economic uncertainty, in political upheavals, this sector, as I've been covering for over 20 years, gets lost in the wilderness. And there's always little gems hiding under the bushels that need to be discovered.
Now, with that being said, Ange, you would let us know what you're up to lately. I said you were now at Small Talk Daily because you're no longer with Vanani. Are you flying solo now?
Well, I'm on gardening leave currently. I'm flying solo as from the 2nd of January. I think as many of your listeners know and my client base, Small Talk Daily has been my brand name for many, many years, and it's been my Twitter handle for nearly a decade. So expect me next year to come out with lots of innovation, a website, potentially an app, podcasts, and all the new technology that will get these small to mid-cap scenarios to the listeners and to the client base and to the institutions in a far more innovative format.
Well, and I think it's about time that you took the brand out on its own. It's big and ugly enough now to stand on its own 2 feet. You've done a fantastic job growing it over the last 2 decades, and about time you start benefiting from that as well. Janine, the first stock for our small cap stocking filler tonight, and mentioned some of the downside that is out there, but on the upside is one that I really love. Aframat, industrial diversified mining in group, really in the start out in the construction sector, led by a very competent deal-making CEO in the form of Andries van Heerden. Some context here, what do you like about Aframat?
Well, for 2019, I still think that we're going to be under a lot of pressure. So I'm going for quality, defensive companies, strong management, cash generation, and an initiative to grow. And I think that's what Aframat has. I mean, they have been able to, over the past 11 years of listing, they've been able to grow their geographical footprint, grow their product base, and they just have a structural cost advantage that the other construction material companies don't have. And that is one of those things that you need to survive in a market like this.
And really, the hallmark of this business has been to consolidate in a market that has been in structural decline almost, and why it is one of the last few remaining companies of its kind. Started out as a regional player out in the Western Cape in KZN, now a real national player. He's done a very interesting empowerment deal with Patrice Motsepe, Johan van Sale now advising. And there's potential to grow and to further consolidate amongst all of those black industrialists who hold mining rights. So a really compelling long-term case.
And just in terms of diversification, so going from construction materials to the more annuity-driven, the lime business, the supplying to ArcelorMittal, Marble Hall from Infrasource as well, more on the better, not aggregate, more industrial mineral side. And the last one, Demaneng, also the iron ore business that they just started, which has ramped up to 1 million tons production a year now. And it's contributing 25% to the revenue and profit line. I mean, how do you do that in a year? That's quite impressive.
It's a very impressive pity about Transnet and those derailments. Ant, I want to bring you back in here purely because this was your one big pick. And I'd like to hear why you like Afrimat and what Andries van Heerden is doing over there.
I think management is the key thing. I've been following the company since it listed over a decade ago, and they've never set a foot wrong regarding any acquisition that they've done. From Glenn Douglas to Clinker Group to Infrasource and lately the Douro iron ore mine near Sishen. So I think management go in and they buy undervalued assets which need a bit of love and care. They go in, they put proper machinery in place, proper systems, proper cost control, and they rapidly turn that asset around to become a very, very profitable entity. And as my panelist just said right now, the iron ore operation, which I've actually visited, I think I'm the only analyst to fly up to see it with Andries a few months ago, went from a 5 million rand operating loss this time last year to a 50 million rand profit in this period. And going forward, depending on where the rand and the iron ore price is, I'm forecasting that iron ore mine could be a significant profit generator for Afrimat, and it didn't even exist a couple of years ago. So this company literally has gone into new areas of diversification, and they've used their expertise from coring to go into related areas of materials. So I think if the time is coming up in the next 12 months, I wouldn't be surprised if Andries and his team start looking for the next deal. Every 2.5 years or so, they always look for the next bolt-on. And they are looking a little bit further afield into Africa and neighboring territories. And they have mentioned to me that perhaps coal may be the next area that they'll apply their expertise to. And if anyone can mine coal profitably, it probably is Afrimat. So I think going forward, even though 2019 is a tough year because of the economy, politics, the lack of infrastructure spend, management and the underlying inherent quality of the business will power this business through once the country starts to recover.
Charles, your first pick is Coronation, and yes, there have been some redemptions. They've gotten a couple of things wrong. They had exposure to Steinhoff and Aspen. Let's face it, who didn't in the asset management space? Those who didn't were really the outliers. But if you look at it, they really have a compelling case. Over half a trillion in assets under management. They're charging a fee on that. The dividend is close to 10%. So at these levels, what's not to like about Coronation?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, firstly, you know, the price is really appealing at the moment. It's traded above 100 rand at its highest, and it's you could buy it at 45 rand today. The asset management has been stable over the last number of years. It's dropped a bit, but I think you've seen that with a number of asset managers. They have had a couple of calls that went against them over the short term. If you look over the longer term, they're still first quartile performer in most of their funds, although they've struggled over the last little bit. But what I like is that asset base is sitting at half a trillion, as you say, almost 600 billion rand. They charge an average fee of about 60 basis points on that. And, I think that won't drop off. They won't see their earnings drop by half or by a quarter even. So it's not that cyclical. But the share price is, just more than half. So, I think if you get in at this value, the dividend gives you a bit of an underpin. It gives you almost like a cash-like return, and any upside in the share price is just a bonus on top of that. And the investment team has been very stable over a number of years. They just lost one of the senior portfolio managers, and that's the first in almost 10 years. So I think it's a good quality business. They've been managing clients' money for 25 years, a stable team. And I'm sure they will continue to deliver first quartile performance here and going forward. So, yeah, I think it's a good pick. It's not really a small company, but I think one that might deliver, above average performance going forward.
Any risks to that thesis at the moment? There's a lot of regulatory sort of headwinds buffeting the big asset managers. I was chatting to Hendrik over at Investec Asset Management, and there are going to be some winners and some losers in that future. You're obviously betting that Coronation is going to be amongst the winners, but what could be a risk?
Well, I think if you look at the average fee, it's sitting 60 basis points. So it's not like it used to be 5 years ago where it was almost 80 basis points. So they have seen a significant drop in the average fee that they charge. It's stabling at the moment, but I think going forward there will be more and more pressure on fees as investors move to more passive funds. So I think that's really one of the longer term concerns. But if you can maintain first quartile performance, you can generate that alpha, so people really get what they pay for, then you should be able to grow that book. What I quite like is over the last number of years they've grown the international book, and that's an international institutional book sitting at over 60 billion rand at the moment. So, they've diversified out of South Africa. They're earning income on dollar assets, and I find that also attractive. So as a shareholder, you kind of bet a little hedged against what the rand and the country is doing as well.
And that feeds into the defensiveness, Janine, that you were talking about as well a little bit earlier. Your second stock for the stocking is OneLogix in the logistics space, not one I'm intimately familiar with.
Well, I've been following them since Altex. They've been probably the most successful Altex-listed company going to the main board. And they've been able to grow organically for the past 2 years without acquisitions. So they do niche logistics services, a combination of acquisitive growth, organic growth in terms of businesses and then startups. So when they first listed, it was only VDS, which is the vehicle delivery service. I'm sure you see that all around on the roads where the car carriers. They've managed to diversify this business from 100% VDS in terms of profitability to VDS only contributing 37% of trading profit. So well diversified, again, solid management behind them, solid margins. What I think sets them apart from the other diversified logistics companies is when they buy these companies, they keep them, they run them separately. They do little small bolt-ons to get critical mass.
Yep.
But each stays a niche business. They don't go into the bigger, great logistics hole and get lost. So they're able to maintain very good margins as well. They recently had Umlaas Road that they developed, which is a vehicle storage facility in KZN outside the Rust Belt. And that has been a phenomenal success story, so much so that they're now in phase three, which is another 43 hectares. And they've got a rail siding there as well, which perhaps could be the next dry port if they play their cards right.
Wow, so they are sitting on some very compelling assets. From an entry multiple level, what are we paying up for OneLogix?
So we're paying about nine times PE. The dividend yield is about 3.1 times. So you're not, even if there's no phenomenal growth, you're still getting some income from that as well. But solid performance, structural growth. In terms of market share, they number one, two, and three in terms of market position in their different segments. So very well placed in the market as well.
And a nice margin of safety, as I say, as well there. And just to bring you in, your thoughts on OneLogix?
It's not really a company I've ever followed. We had a transport analyst, so I left those to him.
Ah, okay, no problem. Charles Bester, Stadio. Is the spin-out of Curo, and obviously seeks to really profit from the, and I hate to say this, but the absolute mess that is our tertiary education sector. We know what Fees Must Fall is doing in terms of the desirability of students to want to go to some of our top universities, and they're bringing a private university, smaller university model to market. What do you like about Stadio?
No, I think it's one of those companies, and especially when you go a small cap, you want to identify companies where there's a tailwind, and a company that could potentially give you that 10 bagger over time. So if we look at just enrollments in general, in 2000 there were just over 500,000 higher education enrollments in South Africa. That's grown to 1.1 million in 2016, so more than doubling. At the moment, private institutions only get 15% of that. The rest, 85%, go to the normal public higher education universities. But if we compare that to other countries, other emerging markets in the OECD countries, that number is 31%. If you look at Brazil, it's 71%, and Chile, it's 84%. So, as a share of the total, it's still very, very low in South Africa. So I think if they can get it right, there's potential for huge growth. They're not looking to take over the market. They're looking to get 100,000 students over time. And as the projections grow, that will only be about 5% of the total number of students that enroll for higher education. So I think, it's one of those companies, the initial capital outlays is huge. But you can really sweat that asset. I mean, you can do one class in the morning, do a different enrollment in the afternoon and one at night. So once you've got that outlay, your return on equity, should be good. But like you said, I think there's push factors sending students to these private universities, and that should grow in line and maybe get us closer in line with our emerging market peers.
And lots of runway for growth there. Janine, just to move on, because we are running out of time, you picked a pure SA Inc. play lastly again, Hudeco. And historically, this is a firm in the manufacturing and industrial space that has delivered a very high return on equity. You're picking it up at a decent entry point as well. So hard not to like it if we see the South African economy turning around. How does this feed into your defensive narrative and theme?
Well, if you look at the industrial players in just in that sector, where Hudeco has been different is they've been diversifying in terms of consumables and in terms of the industrial side. Where if you look at the Invictas, the Torres, those businesses were more in terms of capital equipment and then consumables. And the capital equipment really hurt those businesses quite significantly because of the downturn. Where we used to look at Hudeco on a 50-50 play between consumer and the industrial side. Now you're looking at it more on a 60, almost 70-75-25
split
on the consumer side, which has helped them quite a lot. And they are in captive markets on the consumer side. If you look at security, I mean, that's a growing industry and it's getting more formalized as well. Mm. And you're looking at aftercare parts for cars. And PartCoop is their biggest acquisition to date. Looking at the car park of South Africa actually increasing and the cars, people are driving their cars much longer. So that's quite a buffer. Yes, no, GDP is an issue, exchange rate is an issue, but if we get a little bit of growth going, you can see them firing from both sides. In the interim, we do see that the consumer side is holding up quite well.
And in terms of entry valuation, the last multiple that I saw, I think, was a 13 PE.
About 11, and almost a dividend yield of 4x. So decent dividend payer, consistent. It's not a sexy industry, but it does hold its own. It's predictable.
Well, sometimes it doesn't have to be sexy to be profitable. And speaking of sexy, private equity is certainly finding the sector as a whole quite sexy at the moment. There's a lot of free cash flow in these businesses at very attractive multiples. So unsurprising that we do see a flurry of interest around taking a lot of these assets private.
Absolutely. I think there's a bigger conversation we can have here in another interview, but we've seen of late you know, the Starden family taking at Very Market around 50. An offer being made for Clover Industries. In fact, two offers suddenly now on the table. You know, Master Plastics being courted. You know, on the list of potential candidates, which I tweeted earlier, for example, Rolfs, Metrophile, Valley Group, Santova, Signia, Quantum Foods, Bola Metcalf, Arjun Industrial, all sit on very nice net asset values, are trading on PEs in many cases between a 3 and a 7. And many of these stocks are just unloved, uncovered, and, you know, the private equity players and managers themselves are saying, well, why should we be listed when the market simply doesn't care? Let's just buy it ourselves and run it for our own endeavors. And in many cases, we are losing some potentially good little companies because the market simply is undervaluing these stocks in what is a very torrid market.
And then finally, Charles, you've got 20 seconds to sell Intu, which has jilted at the altar again.
Yeah, so just one of those companies where I think you're really paying 40 pennies to get almost £3 worth of assets. They own 8 of the top 20 shopping centres in the UK regional shopping centres. That represents 67% of the total value in the UK. And those companies own more, UK shoppers spend more than 3% of their annual spend at only those 20. So I think it's a good quality asset. The pound's weak, and you're buying them on the cheap. So again, I think buying, you know, paying 40 pennies and getting £3 worth is truly a bargain. Brexit is a problem. How is it going to play out? We don't know, but I think there's a lot of margin of safety in this one.
Well, there you have it. Charles Best of Career International joining Janine Van Eck of Standard Bank Stockbroking and Anthony Clark, who is finally flying solo, Small Talk Daily with some of their best in the small to mid-cap space.